your manger dogs. Swab the decks and hoist the sails. The guns on board be needin' some proper madam. Pieces of eight and a fine wench on your arm. If you work, be not too shoddy. Careful not to flounder too badly, though, or you may have to dance the hempen jig as we see you to Davy Jones. But Jeffy, my boy, on with the show.
Avast, me hearties. To our listeners from across all regions of the planet, welcome once again aboard the Robin Hood, flagship to the world's one and only cooperatively inspired charity podcast network, WPRPN. Live streaming today from somewhere off the coastal shores of Korea's nuclear-tripping, sadly psychedelic-free peninsula, I'm your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Celebrating his 50th birthday, we're joined this week by yet another one of Minds.com's more dynamic personalities, Cuz the Shroom. A longtime grassroots performance artist, writer, and psychonaut, Senior Shroom was recently discovered living high and dry, virtually marooned out upon the all-too-heartless and stormy digital seas. Naturally, Captain Sinclair ordered the crew to throw him a lifeline, as it seemed he might appreciate a bit of a helping hand. A cassette artist since 1979, the former Austin, Texas-based punk rocker and independent multimedia recording artist was an active member of the Suck Dog Circus throughout most of the 1990s. During the recent solar eclipse, Cuz the Shroom claims to have even been caught up in a dramatic UFO encounter, including an apparently inexplicable 6-hour time loss. As if things couldn't get any stranger down here in Skullport Harbor, buckle up, mateys, as we now present to you episode number 73 of Pirate Radio Podcasts. And we are, in fact, here this week with Cuz the Shroom via the Discord platform, or app, as some people like to refer to it. I think we managed to get everything straightened out, and we were speaking with Cuz the Shroom just a few moments ago in the lead up to things. Are you standing by?
Yeah, I'm on. Can you hear me?
Sure can. You're coming through loud and clear. So this is our first attempt at working on putting something together via Discord. So we're hoping things are going to come through clearly and maybe even a little better than the way we've experienced our the quality of our stream and recording of our shows via Skype. There's also the Appear platform, of course, too, which we sometimes like to use during the Rogues Gallery after show is where you'll often find us turning to that platform. Google Hangouts hasn't really been employed so much to this point over the course of our 73 shows. It really comes down to what the guest is basically looking for or requesting. So it seemed to us like you thought the Discord, is it an app or platform? Anyways, it seemed like you wanted to
come. It's,
So that's what we did.
Yeah, but it wasn't the other one we were trying yesterday had a lot of delay from satellites, I suppose. This has been coming in pretty loud and clear, and we haven't been talking over each other from the delay, so I think it's working out pretty good, man.
Excellent.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this, how it was that we actually managed to first, well, how it was that you were first drawn to our attention. I can't clearly recall, to tell you the truth, other than the fact that you stood out as being a rather creative individual, and I think we might have seen or heard some of your music, something along those lines, and we figured, hey, this is a What a match. You'd be a great match for what we're doing here on the Robin Hood and, you know, the Pirate Radio Podcast Network venture. So
sure.
Thanks.
Sure. For- yeah. You know, Pirate Radio and underground artists, you know, go hand in hand. And, you know, I just posted stuff on Minds and, we were one of the earliest, connections I made there. So, you know, still trying to get it to work for me and, because I really want something to bury Facebook, and mine seems to be the best platform so far to have a shot at doing that.
Well, you know, they're, I think, going through some growing pains at the moment. At the same time, there's a lot of good things that really are happening, of course, too, on a multitude of fronts. We had a number of our groups that we've been a part of as far as working on developing from a creative standpoint that just completely fell off the map. You couldn't find them for close to a month, I guess it was, via a simple keyword group search over Minds. They thankfully just came back the other day. Still not sure what's going on, although we've heard some whispers and, you know, rumors and, you know, murmurs or reports that maybe there had been some server issues and there'd been some efforts or attempts to work on backing servers up or just having a lot of, you know, data shifting around from one place to the next. Let me just say, before we move on here or carry on any further, I'm hearing a bit of an echo. I'm not sure if you got me coming through or got us, our stream coming through on speakers.
It's headphones. It's headphones. I can turn it down a bit. I'll turn down my playback.
Sure.
Do you still hear an echo?
Well, I don't know. We'll have to just...
yeah, as we go along. Okay.
It sounds pretty good, though. I think we're doing okay. So, well, where do we start? Boston, I guess, is what you had told us initially, although you've been all over the place. You're out in New Mexico right now. So as an independent kind of punk rock traveling musician with a multitude of – your discography is quite something. We're going to fire that up here in a moment or two, get your – Sandinista, the release that you put
out? Sandinista was the latest one that I did, and it's a play on the album by The Clash, Sandinista, but I made it about Bernie Sanders. Although at the time, I was kind of a little disillusioned with him. It seemed like he was doing a lot of selling out and just playing a lot of political games, which to me, Sanders was the only authentic person I've seen in my life in politics, the only person that I actually believed in, donated to, and campaigned for vigorously. And it was very crushing to see him have that entire, and that nomination should have been his, and it was stolen from him. But to see him go along with it the way he did was very painful. But in spite of that, I decided I really had to do a political album and call it Sandinista, because I love being able to make statements that have that kind of impact in terms of the title of the record or the appearance of it, the imagery that I use. And I just thought tying it into the old classic punk rock album by The Clash, well, the album was minimally punk. It had a lot of funk on it, actually, other kinds of music, fairly experimental at the time for The Clash, but just the punk attitude. And tying it into that album, I didn't see anybody else doing that. You know, nobody else was, maybe a couple of people were calling themselves Sandinistas. I've always been independent. So like, in the '90s, even though I didn't agree with a lot of what he stood for, I called myself a Perotista because I was supportive of Ross Perot. I supported him as an independent candidate. I didn't like who the Democrats were running and I didn't like George Bush. So I was like, yeah, I like the idea of reforming our political system. Protectionism for trade, that was one of the things that I thought Perot was very good on. He seemed rather conservative and too much of a businessman type of thing for me, but he wasn't as corporate as people like they were in the Reagan administration. Am I kind of loud here?
Pirate Joe Eminon there in the chat area.
Pirate Joe. Pirate Joe.
Well, we got a couple Pirate Joes that typically drop by. You know, they're regular sidekicks here to the show. But he's just saying, yeah, a little high is what he's hearing on his end of things. Basically, if you just want to bring it down, tweak it a little bit, we'll see.
Yeah, how's that? Is that better?
Well, it sounds fine from my end, so we'll have to see what he figures. But, you know, the whole political thing, and this is one of the issues that it's always sensitive with A lot of people, of course, they have more trouble engaging in adult conversation than others. I myself don't have that much of a problem. I'm pretty much able to engage almost anyone, really, when it comes to these things.
Yeah.
And I think just from what you're saying there, we actually, the two of us have a lot of common ground, believe it or not. Although, what you say about the protectionism, pirates, you know, big libertarians, but not when it comes to selling out your country or the whole business. Now, I don't, you didn't say much about open borders, and I know we really didn't,
right.
I didn't want to get too much into the whole political thing today, other than to say that I think we do agree that there was the whole DNC, you know, there was just a charade and fiasco, of course, just a terrible circus show, which it's too bad Hunter Thompson's no longer around. I'm sure he would have had a few.
Oh, yeah.
As would have George Carlin, so.
Yeah. George Carlin was being quoted so much during this election cycle and during the post-election cycle that it almost felt like someone brought him back to life. And it's uncanny when you go listen to his routines, how many of his observations are 100% relevant to what's going on today. I mean, it's like they were recorded yesterday.
Well, that's, I guess, part of what made him so great is his legacy, his commentary and, you know, the comedy and everything that he put out there, creativity-wise.
Yeah.
It's going to be around for a while, so... This is about as serious as hopefully we're going to get over the course of things here today, and then we can kind of maybe lighten the mood a little bit. But Seth Rich.
Well, I can lighten the mood with this observation. If George Carlin were alive today, and if Dennis Hopper was alive today, I would love to see a live remake of the Ralph Bashke film Wizards with Dennis Hopper as Black Wolf and George Carlin as Avatar. It would have been brilliant. It was like the characters were based on them. Is that light, or why am I being irrelevant? Just trying to, but go ahead. What were you going to say?
You're going to ask me? You'll have to send us a link to this. I've never heard of the movie personally, although, did you say Jean-Michel Basquiat, the radio?
No, not him, but I did see one of his exhibits at the Laguna Gloria. No, Ralph Bakshi, he was an animator. He did a lot of work in rotoscoping early on, but it was mostly due to budget constraints. He used to rotoscope like Eisenstein film, Alexander Nevsky, and he would rotoscope footage from World War II and make them orcs. He did a Lord of the Rings animated movie, but there was never a sequel. It was supposed to be a 2 or 3 part movie.
Well, he did the original Lord of the Rings that came out in
the original Lord of the Rings, yes.
Late 70s, yeah. I guess it was.
Yeah, yeah. He's best known for some other thing, but I don't even remember what it is because I didn't like it that much. Cool World. Cool World was the thing. You know, he did Fritz the Cat and and one that's like, oh my God, shocking type of, I guess it's not actually racist, but it uses a lot of racist imagery called Coonskin. Oh my God. It has race issues. It deals politically with race issues. Politically, where I started from as a young kid in the fifth grade is, we shared a house with a black family, in Evanston, Illinois, who were very well connected. So we had the wives of two very prominent, black political activists over for dinner. And that would be Jesse Jackson and Muhammad Ali. And Muhammad Ali is one of my all time, I worship him. He's my only sports hero. I don't really care for spectator sports or watching that, but Ali was an incredible person and a political activist as well. And, also during that time, it was the '70s and I was in a predominantly black, elementary school, and all those kids were like from Black Panther Party. So, you know, when they talked about revolution and stuff like that, I got into it and I liked seeing it and I knew what was going on in the black community, you know, just in the fifth grade. So from my standpoint, that's where it all started. And so especially that makes me very sensitive right now to just the fact that you got it, Pirate Joe, man. He's the best, man. But he's the greatest. Although he would say Allah is the greatest. And that's cool too, man. I just, I love him in so many ways. And, you know, after his passing, when Muhammad Ali died, it didn't matter what the conversation was online, everyone was more eloquent that day. And I think it was a subconscious thing because he was such an eloquent man, both in what he said and how he moved. He was eloquence in motion, just one of the most brilliant fighters and the most valiant people, most noble human beings that that I've ever had been able to witness, just doing anything, you know?
Oh, no doubt about it. Although it's interesting to note as well, there's a bit of bashing that went on as well, too. Just people kind of picking away different things that he might have said throughout the course of his career and his whole, his devotion to Islam, and as well as his remarks regarding Whitey, for example, sort of thing. So my personal opinion of Ali is pretty much, I concur with you by and large. And that, I mean, we've all got our faults and shortcomings. I mean, I'm sure he would quite easily be able to recognize and acknowledge that. And we got to cut people.
Yeah, he was a humble man. He was a humble man, too.
If we can, all of us, make the effort to cut people a little slack, I think we'd find how much more amazingly we'd be able to get along with one another. You know?
I agree. I've been working on that lately, and it seems like the more I'm able to just chill out and accept other viewpoints and try to listen, and the more we engage in dialogue with people that have differing opinions than ours, an honest dialogue, and try to think outside the box, the more we find we have in common. You know, I've got a really good friend on Facebook who's very right-wing, and he's a Christian too, but, you know, after he was like, hey, man, quit calling me an idiot all the time. And I was like, yeah, I think I'll just, you know, kind of chill out and go along with you. We found that we had a lot of things we agreed on. We had found that we had a lot of things we disagreed on, but we could understand a point of view. I found it very valuable. And now, you know, whenever I, you know, post something that we do agree on, he's always there going, yeah, right on, you know. So it's a good experience, you know. And I don't feel like the right-wing, left-wing dynamic is all that important anymore. It's the people versus the corporations now. And, you know, whether you come from that from a libertarian standpoint or a socialist standpoint, or whether you come from it from a moralistic standpoint with very, you know, rigid ideology, or whether you feel like, hey, man, as long as it ain't hurting anybody, let's all be free, you know. Whatever your viewpoint is, I think that there's a lot of things that we can agree on. I mean, right now, the big thing is that almost everybody, well, it's wants to get rid of what we have anyway in terms of healthcare and be more like the rest of the world, where, you know, you don't have to worry about losing everything you own if some illness you don't can't anticipate comes and strikes you down, you know? I mean, why should people have to scrap to survive in the one of the wealthiest countries in history? And why are we putting more people in prison than any country in history, in the world, anywhere? I mean, it's insane. And these are victimless crimes. These are victimless crimes.
That's a major issue that, you know, we'd like to do a show on that. In fact, the private for-profit prison system, which we all have heard, of course, about the Bush-Clinton crime syndicate. Well, yeah. I'm not sure about the Clinton end of things, but I can just imagine, you know, that they've got their hands and they're, you know, heavily invested in this area as well. But the Bush, you know, that end of the crime family is, you know, the private for-prison, or private rather, for-profit prison system. A lot of people think, oh, well, oil or drugs or guns, you know, as far as they're concerned. No, their number one investment, apparently, America's private for-profit prison system. So how about that?
Yeah. And that was started under the Clinton Commission with the whole, I forget what they call it. I wasn't prepared to discuss this. The thing where they were, they started to mass incarcerate people. I mean, my God, the first time I ever seen militarized police was the Waco situation. you know, other than
Ruby
stuff like
Ridge.
That. Yeah, the war on drugs.
Remember Ruby
Ridge? Ruby Ridge. Yeah, I do remember Ruby Ridge, the Montana Freeman and all of that stuff that was going on. Yeah. You know, I was not happy with the Clinton administration, even though I still, at the time, was identifying more as a, you know, a liberal Democrat than anything else. I didn't see Clinton as a liberal Democrat. I thought he sucked all around. I thought he was an audacious liar. He would say things that no one with any self-respect as of their own intellect, I don't feel, would be able to accept. But just as long as enough really stupid people went along with it, you know, he didn't care if he insulted your intelligence. And I've seen that, you know, I was so glad to see that era be put behind me. And to see it happen all again in an election cycle was terrible. It was like what I characterized it as a political machine versus a political movement. And what we had was a political machine that was antiquated and backfiring. And I said, this machine is going to go straight to hell. Watch it. It'll fall. And that's why when Trump beat Clinton, I laughed my ass off. I was happy. And I'm not a Trump fan. I mean, some of the things he said he was going to do, I liked. And I would love to see him do it. The only one that he has done that I think is great is he defeated the TPP. And that goes back to the protectionism thing. But it's not just protectionism. It's the fact that these multinational corporations that own all the wealth in the world want to take everything. And they want us to fight amongst ourselves. They want us to live like slaves. And it seems like they want us to die because they feed us food that is poisonous. You know, it's...
Oh, yeah. Well, it's what we have a group over on Minds, actually. We call it the War on Humanity. So that's really, put a lot of that sort of related content over there. And this business of, you know, full spectrum dominance, and as you're getting out there with the GMOs and whatnot, it sounds like. But
yeah.
Not
just that, the pesticides.
Oh, sure. And the additives. Yeah. And everything, the crap that goes into the food. Absolutely. Big time.
Yeah, and he,
are you hip to the whole chemtrail business, or are you sort of oblivious?
Yeah. Well, you know, at first I wasn't too. Now I thought something was going on, but I was like, yeah, come on, what chemical in the world? You could put pure LSD in a chemtrail, and that works on a microgram level, and it probably wouldn't affect anybody. But a virus would work dispersed that way, and so would a lot of dangerous minerals. So, fluoride. So, and I think some of the things that I've heard that they're doing from some of my friends here in New Mexico is they think that some of these chemtrails are experimental immunization programs where they just vaccinate you against certain things out of the blue. Now, at the most cynical and the most frightening is, yeah, they want to dumb us down or sterilize us, you know, because, you know, we do have to face a population problem. Like we do in the United States, we need four Earths to sustain that. However, if we were in harmony with nature, which I think we should be able to do, I'd love to live in a hobbit hole. You know, I walk barefoot and I smoke a pipe anyway, and I'm kind of shorter than most, so people think I'm, besides all that, you know. But, you know, if we live more naturally, we could have, this planet could support 50 billion people. I mean, these are just statistics that I've read off and on, and I've seen them so often that I'm sure they've been verified, and the sources that they come from I find very, very legit. So, but you know, it's like, a lot of people are paranoid about, oh, you know, they're going to live in hobbit holes and stuff like that. I think that would be a gas. I'd love that, you know. I think that the level of struggling I've had to do anyway has made me really, not interested at all in pursuing the whole consumeristic culture. I've never been materialistic. In my career, I wasn't looking for money. I was looking for fame. I wanted to have my music heard by an audience. I love this. It's great. You know, whatever. You know, I wanted to have an impact on the psyche of people. My vision for my music was inspired by a lot of the punk rockers who were political, like Wendy O. Williams. It breaks my heart. I loved her so much. And, you know, one day I was sitting around in the 90s going, I wonder what she's up to. And I thought, well, I got the internet. I can find out. And so I did a Google search. 4 months after she killed herself. So that's how I found out about it. And it just made me so sad. And, you know, she was so brilliant. And, you know, to a lot of people, you know, she's just like tits and ass or whatever. But, you know, she had a higher vision. She was a vegan. She, or a vegetarian. It's time in terms of talking about GMOs and pesticides and our... I'm also very passionate about, because in addition to my artistic skills, I'm also a naturopathic healer. Just this year, how to immunize myself against airborne allergens. And it's not that difficult, and it's not that radical. A lot of people do it as well. Homeopathy operates on that principle, although I don't generally take a lot of stock with homeopathy as the principle for immunization. It's actually a
Your signal actually is cutting out there a little bit, Shroom. And I guess we actually could, at this point, maybe start to refer to you as Shroom Holly. Is that not the case?
Uh-huh. It's Shroom Holly. And then, you know, my uncle started calling me Shroom because, like, what else, right? And then, you know, because I was a stoner in high school. And, you know, I'm a stoner now.
Well, yeah, that was one of the questions we had for you. Are you, when it comes to psychedelics, how much of a fan are you really?
I'm a psychonaut. I've been on ethnobotanical message boards since the 90s. Theogen.com, and then that splintered off into Spirit Plant Forums, and I was actually a moderator on that. And I helped people do research. I actually did some field work, and that's really good with me because it's like, you know, Terrence, an ethnobotanist, and, you know, if I'd not pursued music and just stayed in an academic career, I was actually majoring in anthropology, and I think it would have led me to be an ethnobotanist as well. So, yeah, I'm very, and the psychedelic experience is very profound for me. I can tell you, I've got a great peyote story that I could share. I don't know how much time we got, but it's pretty amazing. I had a full-blown spiritual experience after a full-blown psychotic episode, because I'm also mentally ill, but I can tell the difference between an episode and tripping, and it was amazing.
Well, we have another hour left here to go, so it's your...
Oh, okay, we're just getting started.
The floor is yours, by all means. Let's hear it.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, we were, like I said, we've been struggling a lot lately, everyone. The actual wage scale hasn't really changed since the 80s, and the actual minimum wage hasn't gone up for over a decade, while prices have more than doubled. So everyone's suffering in this economy. And we were having housing issues because we had managed to arrange to get my dad to pay a mortgage on a cabin that we were going to stay in. And we had a kid, and we thought, oh, well, we'll build out on it. And then my brother said, my dad's not doing well, we're going to put him in a home, which I do not like, but that's what he wanted to do. So my dad had to sign off his property. In essence, we were going to lose our home, and nothing affordable was presenting itself. And I was getting really, really triggered by that. Being bipolar, I can have manic episodes, and I can have that with the depression, and I can also get suicidal ideation. Well, I call this progress, is instead of having suicidal thoughts now, what I have is fugue, which is a psychological term that means you try to run away and just disappear somewhere and just go off and try to vanish. Well, I ran out into the woods because that's what I do out here. The part of New Mexico I live in is a mountainous area, heavily forested. And so I ran off, and I was out there, and I was laying on the ground looking up at the clouds, and it looked like a big eyeball to me. And I thought, well, that's the eye of God, and religious mania is a feature of my psychosis. So I looked up at that eyeball, and I saw the God of thou shalt not, and I said, get out of my life. I don't want you anymore. I don't want to be told thou shalt not. I don't want to have these stupid rules that make people fight all the time, that are arbitrary and meaningless, these Ten Commandments, all of that. I don't want the Jehovah. Get out. You're not welcome in my life. I don't care if I never see anyone who in my family who's died again. You know what I want the spirits in this forest that the natives knew, that they know now, today. I want to see that. I want to see that. You're not welcome anymore. And that's what I said to it. Well, shortly after that, I began climbing on up this cliff and I saw this cactus. Now, I have been looking since I was 15 years old out in these mountains for peyote, and I know what peyote looks like, and it doesn't actually grow here naturally. It has to be planted here. But there are other psychedelic cacti called peyotillos. Some of them are just as strong, and some of them even contain mescaline, but most of them contain other chemicals. Well, I'd had some peyote before, and it was exceedingly bitter. I didn't have enough of it, so I didn't really experience that much from it. You know, the bitterness and the sickness and all that was keeping me from doing the research and the fieldwork. But at this time, I thought, this is the right time. This cactus right here is telling me to take it. I didn't think anything would happen, but I did it anyway, and I took a little rock because I didn't have a knife or anything. I took the flesh out, and I started eating it, and for one thing, it wasn't bitter at all, and it didn't make me sick, but within 5 minutes, it felt like I had an acid trip coming on. I was like, what? With it, and I was like, this isn't right. This couldn't be happening. Then as I kept climbing the mountain, I started to lose my balance. I started to laugh and feel a little bit drunk, and I said, yeah, I am tripping. By the time I got to the top of the mountain, I was thinking all these strange thoughts. I realized I need to go back home to my wife. I called her. You know, I was like, yeah, it's going to be 30 degrees up here tonight. It was a spring night, and it gets cold in the mountains in the spring, early springtime. So, and I didn't have pants on, and there was just a lean-to out there, and I was like, yeah, you're stupid if you're going to stay out here. I also had this run forever. That's one of the things that that they say happens when you take these cactus. So I called her and she said she's going to go out with a flashlight and I could follow her down to the road from the mountain because it was getting dark. And I was barefoot and there were cactus all over the place. Even in broad daylight, I walk real carefully because the grass hides them. But I had no fear and I just started running in the grass and I felt so good. And I didn't get stuck by any cactus. By the time I made it to the edge of the cliff and saw my wife down there with the flashlight, I was seeing tracers in the star. The sky was kind of breathing. I lay down and I looked at the moonlight through the grass and it was so beautiful. And, you know, I started listening. I had been listening to this inner dialogue, but it started to say things that were really meaningful. And it said, problems are coming from within you and you have the power to change them. And when all was said and done, after this experience, when I got home and everything else, I could describe the trip a lot more detailed, but the bottom line is I had this experience that was so profound because I'm agnostic. I don't know if there's a God or not. And religion is something that has always been something I've been passionate about, whether it's as an atheist or as a Baha'i. I don't know if there's a God or not, but I do know that there was some being that I had been searching for my whole life that said, here, you need this, and gave it to me out of love. And I know that that is something that happened. So that was a profoundly mystical experience to me, and it changed me. And it set me on this course where I'm trying to calm the rage and the madness that's within me. And so I love it. I love it. But that's just one of many psychedelic experiences, you know. But that was the most meaningful one. Ah, the UFO experience, yeah. I don't know. I'm not talking as much about my music as I should be.
Well, we are streaming your music, so we've got your Burndanista album queued up here. And so you were mentioning earlier how you had not, you felt, been able to be heard by a wide enough audience. This will hopefully provide that opportunity to reach greater number of people out there, you know, via the web and so forth. But we've also, let's not forget, just to remind you, we have a show coming up in October. It's going to be our third Minds Indie Music World Showcase. So your tunes are great, frankly. We really get a kick out of them and think that they would very much complement what it is that we work on putting together here on a semi-regular basis. So even to the point maybe of, you know, if we manage to get, say, like a radio station going where it's not just, because we are the flagship here, the Robin Hood. modern WPRPN network. And, you know, we'd love to have a independent radio station in place where we could have streaming around the clock.
I want that too. Go ahead, ask me the question.
Well, I was just going to say, we've also got Operation Secret Santa coming up here in December. So that's something else that you might want to just check off on your calendar and keep in mind. I know you have a social consciousness and are we committed to charity and redistribution of profit. We've got that worked into our formula here where for example, taking out subscriptions via the network, it's a three-way split is what ends up happening. So a third of the money, the annual income ends up going, or booty, we should say.
The booty. Give me your booty.
Yeah.
Wonder. Yeah.
It ends a third of it with a $15 annual, just a private kind of personal subscription. $5 ends up going back to the finder or recruiter directly, and that's on a yearly basis. They keep getting, for every year that whoever it is that they manage to bring on board stays hooked up and affiliated, tied into the network, that revenue is secured. Another $5 goes to the community chest or kitty, as it were, for charity, and the other third back directly to the network to help, you know, maintain and cover, you know, operating costs and people's salaries or the gratuity end of things, just a way of kind of saying thanks to folks for helping out and whatnot. Now, if you've got a commercial product to sell or some kind of merchandise or anything like that.
Oh, well, I always have music out, but I usually end up giving more away than I sell.
Well,
sometimes people will buy my stuff.
Well,
But I love the charity. The whole thing behind Sandinista was charity. I wanted to donate to these activist groups like Justice Democrats, which I don't really think I'm not so hot on because I don't like Democrats right now at all after what they did. Living in New Mexico is a closed primary state, so I had to choose or else not participate in the primary. So I registered as a Democrat, and I had gotten to where I was, it's insidious. I gotten to where I started identifying as one, but that ended real quick during the campaign. But getting back to that, one that I really liked was independentvoter.org, and the other one was Draft Bernie for New People's Party. But at any event, I volunteered my music to these guys and tried to say, hey, look, you can put it on your page royalty free as merchandise, because I don't have money. I went into debt donating to Bernie Sanders, and it's frankly now puts my future even more in the shadows because my debt is very large, my credit sucks, and a place to live is very difficult, although we're getting out of that. We're getting out of that thanks to a real good friend who we're moving in with. And we found a big enough place and getting out of public housing, which sucks. But the thing is when I was in Austin, I was in a community. And, you know, back in those days, you had fanzines and even really good national ones that wrote about you. And you had exposure through that. You had flyers you could put up. You had radio stations that would play your music. And that's happened quite frequently to me. But, you know, I have not been able to connect with anything like that online. And when I moved from Austin to come live in the mountains, I was hoping that would take the place of what I had for exposure. So it's not that I've been retired. It's that people don't really know that I'm still doing my thing and I'm still Cause This Room. And in fact, I'm better than ever because every time I create something and I fail, I try to work harder to make it succeed. So I learned from it. Just about 5 years ago, I got my first good stereo system. And after listening to my mixes through a good set of speakers, I said, oh my God. And my production has improved radically since then. So I've been using all of my recording here to the best, the peak of perfection. And you said yourself that you like it, and it's good. You know, sometimes I have a lot of self-doubt, and I'm like, am I crazy? Am I the only one that likes this insane shit? Because it's just, it's madness. I mean, it's not mainstream at all, and I mean, Sandinista may be the most mainstream thing I did, because I used some metal drum loops, I used a lot of guitar, and but even that has got moments where it just goes off kilter, and nobody's like, whoa, I've not heard this particular thing mixed in the music before. My point is that, you know, when I listen to it, when I lose faith that what I'm doing is important or good or somehow useful to people, because that's all I want, is to be useful, is to have something good and important and something that people will listen to. When I hear it myself and I listen to it, I'm like, no, this is good. You can't rag on yourself and think of yourself as this old guy who's going to die in 50 years and is going to be forgotten, because regardless of how you feel or your own failings as a human being, because I have a lot of shortcomings, you know, I've had anger issues through the last many years, but regardless of all of that, the music stands alone, and I believe in the music, and I hear it, and there's no question in my mind that it's wonderful stuff. It's stuff that so many people would enjoy, but I just can't get the message out there, and I'm really glad for this opportunity to do so.
Oh, it's our pleasure. We're more than happy to promote independent musical and artistic talents. That's our job, really. That's central to our mandate and what we're all about here. So, and let me just add, you don't have to pay a single, not a dime, not a penny for your, you get, as a guest or someone that's helping out in any way with the network, you automatically receive a complimentary subdomain URL. So, as long as you can, or somebody that you know is able to use WordPress, you can easily put together your little bio there with a synopsis, kind of overview of what it is that you're all about, and links that go, you know, that direct people back to your Bandcamp pages and your Barbarian project and whatnot.
The Barbarian Clan, yes. Sure.
And we could talk about that. Now let's just hold off on that for a second, maybe circle back around in a few minutes, because there's a few other more pressing things. Let's just quickly address this and then we'll move on. But you're talking about anger issues, and you know, we did promote today's show on Minds under the spirituality theme and category. Unfortunately, because of the way the booster system is in place right now, we cannot boost anything or anyone via Google Chrome. There's some kind of cock blockage that's occurring there. Firefox seems to work okay, but as far as sending you anything directly to, you know, Cuz the Shroom, your profile comes up, but we cannot boost you directly for some reason. There's just nothing through the browser happening. So we did it on our own means. But let me just ask you, the anger issues that arise, you know, I myself have been a lazy Buddhist of sorts for a quarter of a century, more or less.
I love that term, lazy Buddhist.
Yeah, that's the Dalai Lama, I think, is. I ripped it off of the Dalai Lama, so that's where we got.
That's one I haven't heard. I love the things he's.
Yeah. He's got, like Muhammad Ali, he's got his critics too, but the whole thing is like Aristotle said, if you want to live a life free of any criticism whatsoever, do nothing, say nothing, be nothing. You know, that kind of thing. So it's like,
I love that quote. Yeah. I love that quote. That's one of my favorite. That.
But let me just ask you this. You, as a Baha'i, practicing Baha'i, maybe a lazy Baha'i.
Very lazy.
Yeah. But isn't meditation and breathing exercises, aren't they emphasized as far as visualization and just release of, and transformation, really? That's a critical part of things too, of the energy that we possess and, you know, that we have as humans. Do you not meditate?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't do it consciously, but I think I meditate when I go into the forest and when I hike in the mountains. I do a lot of mountaineering. And, you know, I've recently come into contact through Facebook through a guy that's really cool called Jin Aquarian. And he was part of the Source family back in the 60s. And that was a kind of a they've called it a cult. And in some ways it was. But it was also just a communal living thing of some hippies that were very spiritual. And Jin talks about breathing a lot, and he talks about meditation. What they did is they meditated through smoking a little bit of pot ritually in the morning every day, and they, you know, they had their sexual things that they did for meditation as well. But, you know, it was a community that was into that. And Jin is into a lot of Kabbalism and breathing and stuff like that. So, but the breathing exercise things that he talks about, it reminds me of how when I go hiking, you know, the air is, I live at about 6,800 feet. So the air is thinner here. A lot of people, when they come up here, really don't have a lot of strength to do much if they come up from sea level, and you have to get acclimated to it. But it's a wonderful thing to go up a mountain and, you know, it's a little bit warm, and then all of a sudden you feel the air change. And so you breathe differently as that happens. And my friend showed me, Wim Hof and his breathing, the Iceman, was talking about that. And, I've been checking that out, and it sounds like some really solid stuff. So I do want to try to get into that. But you know, I'm not turning 50. I'm turning 40-10. I've decided I'm not going to leave my 40s. I'm going to be 40-10 this year. Next year I'll be 40-11, 40-12, et cetera. That's it. I'm not getting on any older than my 40s. But I have the impatience of youth. So I haven't been able to settle my mind enough to really meditate. I mean, I have mental issues. I have anxiety issues. I have insomnia. So the energy, I'm, you know, when I'm not depressed to some extent, I have a manic, just a drive to do something. It's an inward thing. I look within myself, and I don't try to be anything but myself. You know, when I was a kid, I really tried hard to be David Bowie or Captain Beefheart or Sid Barrett. But really, because those people were just being themselves, that just looped back into, yeah, just be yourself. And that's for music, but everything else too. Everything I do, most everything I've learned has been largely self-taught. I'm interested in learning everything and anything in terms of skills, you know, and you know, it's like I've always been into naturopathic healing and herbalism throughout my whole life. And I knew quite a bit before I moved out here, but gradually over the years, I've been out here almost 15 years. So it kind of snuck up on me where all of a sudden I know so much about the medicinal properties of things that grow up here, and I've experimented personally with so many of them that there's a lot of native healers that look at me like, how does he know all this stuff? We don't know that stuff. I've been told that by many people, and I've had people like, for example, I know a guy who's a native tracker. He can go get elk horns and just bring them back, and they're worth a lot of money, and a lot of people do that up here. But it's a serious skill. It's a serious outdoorsman skill. But you know, he's asking me about mushrooms. You know, he doesn't know anything about the mushrooms out here, and I'm an amateur mycologist. I'm like, yeah, that one's edible. And there's also a psychedelic mushroom out here that I've been looking for years, and I've been where it grows, when it grows, but I just haven't encountered it. I know what it looks like now, and I just didn't have any luck. But I haven't had a lot of time to go up there. It's about a 1,500 foot climb, about 2 miles into really dense woods. So it's not an easy climb by any stretch of the imagination.
Are we talking, yeah, Amanita muscaria, perchance?
No, I'm talking about one that was discovered by a friend of mine, Lee Wallstead. He was a kid that was in a punk rock band called Backwash. When I met him, he was like 15, and when I moved up here, so I guess he's about 30 now. And he discovered this thing. In New Mexico, up until this point, the only psychedelic mushrooms that grow out here is a pinoleus mushroom and two gymnopolis, unless you include the Amanita muscaria. They're generally considered a dissociative and more of an intoxicating mushroom than a psychedelic, but they also have psychedelic properties. It's one of my favorite psychedelics to use, but everybody loves psilocybes, and I include myself in that because there's nothing like the quiet bliss and the transcendent trippiness of a mushroom trip. It's just, you know, I can't imagine having a bad trip on mushrooms. Some people do, but I can't imagine it. It's such a mellow experience and yet so vivid and so intense at the same time. But it's something I really love. But this guy, he discovered the one psilocybin species that's active that grows out here. He wanted to name it Psilocybe sacramentus, and he submitted it to some mycologists, and they called it Mescaleroensis, which I think is a little bit more appropriate because it was found on the Mescalero Reservation, so it should be called Mescaleroensis. He says sacramentus because these are the Sacramento Mountains. There's some Strophoria mushrooms out here as well, and they are thought to be, some of them I've experienced something on, but it's these Mescaleroensis mushrooms are related to Cyanensis, which is one of the really strong ones. So they're powerful. Oh boy, there goes my gastric esophagus disorder.
Baking soda? You heard about how that neutralizes stomach acids,
yeah.
Have you not? So
Yeah. I do that. I don't like the taste of it, but I do it when I have to. I have aloe vera gel, but I have been really lazy about taking it. And you can juice cactus. Like if you juice a prickly pear, that's really good for esophagus. Just haven't done any of that yet. And really, when I start to cough up a lot of phlegm, I just eat cardamom seed pods, and they're really good. They soothe my throat quite a bit.
Mescaline comes from New Mexico. Is that not where it originates from?
Actually, the La Fodra or something like that, the actual peyote cactus that we all know and love, that's described by Aldous Huxley, and which contains the most amount of mescaline. Mescaline is also in San Pedro cactus, which grows in Peru. I have one of those cactus and have never tried it, just growing it. But the peyote cactus is actually from West Texas. It grows out in West Texas, across the border into, I'm having a little mental thing where I know the name of the state, but I'm thinking of Saltillo, which is in the state, it's like I know what Mexican state it's in.
Let's give you a chance just to collect your thoughts there while we remind listeners we're talking with Minds.com's Cuz the Shroom this week, episode 73 of Pirate Radio Podcast, speaking to us live via, I guess it's a mountaintop out in New Mexico. I'm not sure where exactly.
We're pretty high. This is Ruidoso Downs. There's three population centers, actually four, that are close by, and then there's another one. This is the most populous area in Lincoln County, and Ruidoso is, and it has only 7,000 permanent residents. It does get to be about 10 times as large during tourist season. But I'm in Ruidoso Downs, which is the more working class community out here, because most people can't afford to actually live in Ruidoso if we're in the service industry, which most people out here are, because you have tourists. And then you have Alto, which is a little bit higher, and it's in elevation, but it's all forested, it's all wooded, and it's all right on the Mescalero Reservation. So consequently, there's a lot of Apaches out here, and you get to know people, and it's really nice knowing so many diverse people. I mean, it's not as diverse as I like it when I was in Austin, you know, like there's only a handful of African American out here, you know. When I run into them, I'm like, oh, look, there's a few more in our community now. A lot of culture comes from the Mescalero Apaches, the Spanish and Mexican influences as well. And it's really nice to see the different cultures and how it plays out. Because I was an anthropology major, you know, and not all of it's good, you know, because there's things where the cops are hassling the natives all the time. When I was a cab driver out here, which is funny because I'm Iranian, so even this little tiny community had an Iranian cab. But when I was a cab driver, I would give a lot of natives rides back and forth from the reservation, and sometimes I'd do it for free because they had law dog on them. The cops and stuff were after them or were trying to hassle them, shake them down and stuff like that. And so, you know, I'm helpful to people. I've known a lot of people in the community for a long time. And there's a lot of gossip and stuff, and I have no idea what people say about me, except that I know that they think I'm crazy because I'm always walking around barefoot and look and dress like I do, because I don't dress conventionally, and I tend to have a thing where I ignore gender as far as items of clothing. Now, it's not like I cross-dress, although I did do drag at a certain point in Austin. In fact, I even placed in a drag ball. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. It's just I'm unconventional. Like I said, I do my own thing. I'm me. And a lot of people, you know, they can't take it or whatever. And the fact that I've, you know, had Phyllis come into my life, such a beautiful woman and a wonderful partner, people get jealous. They're like, oh, man, this guy is crazy as a bedbug. And look how happy those two are. And she's not conventional either. So it's like we're a couple of weird nonconformists out here. But, you know, there's our share of that, too. It's not like we're the only ones. So, you know, getting to know, it's a small community. But the Downs is also lower in elevation. Right now I'm living in Inspiration Heights, which is a housing project at the highest point in the Downs. We're moving right off the highway in a trailer park, but we're going to own the trailer, and we're renting to own, and we have a financial plan. Eventually, what I want to do is we want to get some land and build an earthship and live in the earthship. And my friend who's going in on the trailer with us says, this is what we're going to do, and in return, you give me 1 acre of that land and let me put a trailer on it, and we'll all be happy, and we can rent out the one that we're buying. So that's our plan for the future, and, you know, hopefully there'll be some semblance of civilization by the time that happens so that we can have a measure of security and prosperity. But, you know, what I see right now in the world is the thing is just everything's falling apart. I don't think we have a functioning government except in terms of its being able to provide what it's already things like Social Security, which I'm on, but, you know, who knows how long that's going to last, even with the way things are going. And so, you know, it's worrisome, but I don't think the government is either legitimate. I don't think that we have a real democracy. You know, what the hell is this thing where you have political parties brokering who you can vote for? That wasn't in the Constitution. And I have something to say about that because on my father's side, see, I'm half Iranian. My father was from colonial times in America, in New England specifically, and our family fought in the revolution, and we believed in it. I don't know if the founding fathers gave a shit about the principles they talk about, you know, because they were aristocratic, they were Freemasons, they were elitists. But, you know, my family, we were solid behind liberty, and we fought for it. And we fought for democracy. And I grew up with a very strong love of that, in addition to the spiritual beliefs that I got from my father, because he became a Baha'i and married my mom when he met her at a Baha'i convention in England. So, and my dad has been always, he's a lot like me too. He's a very independent thinker, and he was attracted to the Baha'i faith because of independent thinking, because that's one of the highest principles in the Baha'i faith, is that you don't have anyone think for you. You don't accept any spiritual authority but yourself. What you believe is going on in the condition, in the human condition, and with God or whatever is between you and God. It's not, no one else can, we don't have clergy or anything like that. So I was brought up as a free thinker, which is kind of an odd thing to say when it's a religion that's involved. But, yeah, certain religions do respect free thought, whereas most take religion in this country to be a system of dominance and control. And it's a hierarchical and it's authoritarian and it tells you what to think. That's so alien to me that I really never really understood the depths of that until a few years ago when I just started thinking, man, no, some of these religious types out here are just flat out against free thought. They want you to shut up and believe what they say, regardless of whether there's any truth behind it. It doesn't matter to any of them if there's any truth behind it, and it doesn't matter to them if the whole world goes to hell because of it. A lot of these guys, they don't care if the world is destroyed by our lack of progress or our inability to forge ahead with society in a decent and civilized way. They don't care about that because some outside force is going to come and save them. A lot of these, and I'm talking about fundamentalist Christians, and what I like to say to them is, hey, what about this? What about where it says, where Jesus says, the kingdom of heaven is within you? Doesn't that tell you that you have to be the one making the change in this world? You have to be the one looking forward to enacting kindness and nobility and all of these wonderful things that would be so powerful if we would just rise up as human beings and take a high standard of ethics and love unconditionally our fellow human beings and do things for the good of humanity instead of always for ourselves. The Baha'i Faith teaches that the only real devil, the only Satan, is self, is selfishness. Baha'u'llah calls it the prison of self. He says there's no prison but the prison of self. The only prison is the prison of self. And, you know, that's something that I've dwelled on throughout my life. So I feel very strongly that we can't just sit here and wait for some miraculous thing to happen. Although, you know, I do think that it may have to come to that, but it may be something unexpected, like perhaps an alien intervention. Because after my UFO encounter, I really do believe that they're going to be involved somehow in whatever we need to do. Because I saw a UFO for my birthday, basically. It was a birthday trip even about a week ago. Our lives are in chaos and unstable, and so we can't really plan anything. I don't have anything planned special. This is it, and the eclipse. Those were the two things I wanted to do for my birthday before
happy
it happened.
Happy birthday to you.
4010, thank you.
4010, but, four calls the shroom. Happy birthday to you, Sir Simon. So, hey, man, there's a lot of ground there, and, I mean, I don't know why you don't have your own podcast, actually, radio show.
Well, I sort of do. I have a that I called Weaponized Information, you know, because it's another one of those things where I wanted to take something. I get an idea for a title for calling something and thinking, oh, this is so brilliant. No one else has thought of that. So I wanted to do that because, you know, the Russiagate thing, which I think is a lot of nonsense. The whole thing was, Donna Brazile getting up there and saying, oh, weaponized information was used against us. Well, that's an interesting thing to say because you just admitted it's information. You didn't say it was a lie and bullshit like you're always saying. You said it was information. So, okay, if you're going to say weaponized information, I'm going to give you more. I'm going to be your source of weaponized information. But, you know, a political blog doesn't come very well or naturally to me. And I can tell by watching the few episodes that I did record that I'm pretty awkward at it. Now, I could maybe get better if I practiced a lot. Like I said, our lives are in turmoil and chaos, and I am somewhat disillusioned with the political process and the political system, which is why I'm going to go straight from this super political album to something radically different. I am going to create a spiritual album because I'm good at it. Like I said, when I have my episodes, my psychotic episodes, and really fundamentally at my core how I feel about religion is I feel like an agnostic, and I believe as an agnostic, but that's not inconsistent with the Baha'i faith because the Baha'u'llah says that God is unknowable. So I infer from that, using my logic, that if we have finite minds and God is infinite being and incomprehensible to the human mind, then what we think of as God does not exist. So literally, the existence of God proves the non-existence of God. So I, as an agnostic, all I can do is say, well, I can believe this. It's not true. I can't go up to someone and say, this is absolutely true, because it's a belief. No one can. God is too large to fit in any one religion. So my lyrics have, throughout my career, I've always had, even when I was an atheist, just punctuated by religious imagery, things about prophets being killed, you know, people who came to this world from another source, from a divine source, some kind of vision of something better and being rejected by the power structure, by the people who would suffer the most by giving up their power and their glory so that other people could be happy, and they were destroyed by it. And, you know, I'm not a Christian by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, the story of the crucifixion of Christ is just the most moving story. I love the musical Jesus Christ Superstar. I love it. And one of the reasons I love it is it's secular and it doesn't deal with any of this resurrection stuff, which is probably the main distinction between me and a Christian, is I don't believe there was a physical resurrection of this guy. And I don't think it was an act of sacrifice to absolve man from some insane Old Testament sin that doesn't make any kind of sense, you know, because I don't think seeking knowledge or having a fruit of knowledge is a sin. There's a lyric in one of my songs that says this: how wrong to think your bleeding savior died for some curse, not your behavior. Because it's not that he died for your sins, it's that he died because people are stupid and don't want to change. It's like George Carlin says, John Lennon, Gandhi, all these people, all they wanted us to do is live together in peace and love, but we are not ready for that, so we had to shoot them in the head.
Boom. Dead.
Yeah. And I feel very powerfully about that. Because I'm having frustration trying to go the political route, it's like, well, maybe that's what I should do. Go the spiritual route. And I'm not not kidding about this. I had this vision. You know, I have a thing called the staff of vision, which is a staff that I made, and I had some people write things on it. And I thought I would take my staff, and I would go into the woods, and I'd find a wild horse that would come to me. And even though I've never, I would be able to tame this horse just through my love and compassion for this animal, and it would bear me, and it would take me to Washington, D.C., and I would go to D.C., and I would stand up before Congress, and I'd put the staff before me, and I would lay out a biblical curse. And I would say, you guys are going to work for the people, or God is going to curse every one of you. You will see a plague like mankind has never witnessed. And I would speak with authority. And I'm not trying to put myself in the position of a Moses or a prophet or anything, but an instrument, as someone to act as a conduit for that kind of thing. And maybe it goes back to the anger issues, but I have to release it. I have to get away from it. See, the whole thing about the staff of vision is I got that from the staff of law, which is from a fantasy series called The Chronicles of Thomas Covenant, the Unbeliever. And he's called the Unbeliever for a reason. He's in a magical land. He has a magical Horus, which has incredible power. He doesn't know how to use it, and he doesn't believe in it. But he ends up being the one that uses it because he's the paradox. It's the white gold is the magic item. It works through him. He is the white gold, and he has to learn that through all these ordeals before the power comes to him. It's symbolic. It's symbolic for the kind of growth that we all go through, and then we all know about Jungian archetypes and the heroic journey. And my archetype is the rebel. But at the same time, I'm also curiously unable to be a rebel on a personal level. I'm very polite to people. I follow the rules. I like to go barefoot, but if I'm going into the store, I've got a pair of moccasins that I put on. To say, you know, I've been talking a lot about barefoot, but when I lived in Austin, I also loved dressing up and going out, and I love putting on cool shoes. Shoes have their place for me. Don't get the idea that I'm just a wild hippie out here in the mountains, but, you know. Anyways, I got the idea from the fantasy series, and that's been a very influential series. And so I feel like, what is spirituality without action? You know, and I think we need to enact our values. I think the world is in dire need of it. The world is in need of saving, and we have to come together as the human race. If you look at a molecular biology and the record of humanity as we've evolved, we've undergone three near extinction events and have so little genetic diversity that two kittens from the same cat could have more diversity than you and a guy living in jungles, Guinea, who's never seen an elevator. Which, by the way, I met somebody like that in New York City. That's another story. But here's the thing. It's like we're practically inbred. This is one family. It's the human race. We gotta get it together. I mean, everything mankind has ever believed is that there is something spiritual. There's a spiritual destiny. There's some kind of good that we need to do. And that's the teachings of all the great religions of mankind, is that you're supposed to, the truest way to worship is to uplift your fellow man and be of service to others and to love them. And that's something that I always clung to, regardless of whether I've called myself an atheist or an agnostic, or I don't think I've lived it very well, but yet, you know, the people in my life go up to me and say, oh man, you know, you're such a spiritual person. Would you bury my goldfish and say a prayer for him? And you know, it's like, why do these people look at me like that? I'm crazy, and I argue and I fight, and I have wild ideas, and I'm very stubborn, and I have anger issues, and I'm mentally ill, and you know, it's like, damn, you know? Yet, you know, people just, I guess, you know, they respond to the same thing that I responded to in Bernie Sanders, which is authenticity. I'm not full of shit. I don't put on airs. I don't try to be something I'm not. I'm just who I am, and people love that, and they respond to it. Authenticity. And, you know, that's not unique. There's a lot of people who are. I mean, that's why I gravitated towards the cassette artist community and the punk rock community, because that's is to really be ourselves. And to forge ahead and to have a world where you could be yourself. Stories where punk rockers were wearing a studded, it could be an urban legend, but they were wearing a studded bracelet, right? And a cop saw the light shining off it and shot him because of that. And here in New Mexico, if you appear threatening, if you just appear threatening, you can have assault charges filed on you. So in the early days, and this is why I was one of the first punk rockers in my high school, even though I was there in the 80s and not the 70s, punk rock never took off in New Mexico the way it did everywhere else, because you could get thrown in prison for walking around in the kind of getup that we would wear. A lot of the early punk fashions were very aggressive. Studs and spikes and safety pins, torn clothes, leather, all of that. I mean, I was into it, but I didn't know. You know, I was just a kid. And so I didn't know that that you could actually be charged with assault for appearing threatening.
Well, that's really quite something. And it kind of is reminiscent of what we see today with people being targeted, as well as just their voices being silenced via Google, for example, or other social media outlets, because people will complain and say that they feel offended. But before you jump in and respond to that, let me just remind people, we've only got about 10 minutes left here, Shroom. You've been really going at it in a big way here, and just kind of, I'm not sure if venting is the best way of putting it up, but you've had the floor and just letting folks hear what it is that you want to talk about today. We have so many issues and other things and points that I would like to address and to ask you about and get your views on. I should have laid this out for you or brought this up earlier. It's too late now, of course, because our time is limited, but make sure that we keep our, just when you, I know you're able to easily go on a tear and really let it all hang out, but if we could just keep things to a 1 or 2 minute response or kind of time frame so that I'm able to jump in as the kind of host and facilitator and kind of help, you know, just kind of bring up these other talking points, because there are so many, including, of course, your UFO experience, as well as the fact I think you mentioned Muhammad Ali and Jesse Jackson having spent some time, or if I heard it clearly the first time around, having dinner with the wives of these two gentlemen, coast to coast AM. I know that you referenced this earlier, just in the lead up to things before we actually went live, and how in listening to our earlier shows, you felt it was somewhat reminiscent of the old Art Bell days, which couldn't have a greater compliment than that, of course. So, you know, and just so many other things too, including Lisa Suckdogs and the Boyd Rice connection. You know, your history as an independent movie maker. I was hoping we could maybe, why not get into this whole business of, I'm not sure if it's your outright support for the Young Turks, but that's definitely worth talking about. I'm not sure, we might have a divergence of views on that whole matter, but we'll see. The mental health issue is another fascinating area. But let me just tell you this. I think you're a goldmine of information and ideas. Pretty much we could put easily like a dozen shows together featuring you. The next time we maybe try to do something like this, just kind of maybe either off the cuff or have you come in as a stringer, if you're interested. Someone that's just willing to kind of, and we do have a few people out there that are affiliated with the network who they do stand by at the ready to just kind of jump in at a moment's notice. You know, I think you'd be well suited to serve in that sort of capacity. You said earlier as well that you're good to go for the after show. We got the Rogues Gallery here that's going to be coming up in about 10 or maybe 15 minutes at the most, I'd imagine. That's still on your checklist. You're up for that, are you? The Rogues Gallery after show? Okay. We seem to have lost Cuz the Shroom Holly. I'm not sure. Maybe, geez, I hope I didn't offend the guy. or I think maybe just perhaps what's more the case probably here is a technical malfunction or breakdown. But in the meantime, of course, we've had a handful of people following things here as we've been streaming live over the course of things. Episode 73, Pirate Radio Podcasts, Cuz the Shroom out of, I'm not sure where exactly, in New Mexico. Yeah, question marks, big time there, Pirate Joe Eminon. So, God, I hope the aliens didn't get him, or whatever it was that he saw just a week or so ago. We were really hoping to get a little more into that, of course. Quite a story that we were hoping he could flesh out or we'd be able to hear in more detail. So let's just see, check up on things here. Nothing coming through. Oh, he dropped out of the call. My God, I'm not sure what happened there exactly. Yeah, we've lost him on Discord. Now, that could just be a coincidence or something else. I'm not sure. Let's see what we can do here. Discord is a new app and a new platform that I myself, frankly, am not overly familiar with. But we'll see if we can reboot here, trying to get back in touch with Cuz the Shroom and see if there's any response from his end of things. Mr. Holly, are you there? We have his avatar popping up, but nothing coming through on his end. All right. Well, we're just going to assume then that he's having some technical... Yeah, laughing my fucking ass off. You're not the only one, Pirate Joe, so let's see. I think, in fact, if I'm not mistaken... Well, yeah, we've got Captain Long John Sinclair. We're just some of the crew members here. Inform us, Captain Sinclair, are you there?
No, I'm here, Top Head, and quite a mystery what's really occurred here. So hopefully, maybe overly sensitive, perhaps, could be one possibility or scenario. Just a simple breakdown there with communication and from a technical standpoint.
Well, that's what we're kind of thinking here. Who really knows?
Well, he may be a targeted individual as well, and when these sort of things occur, you never know what's going to happen. It's all sorts of, these things are unavoidable, really, so, and I wouldn't want to fly off half-cocked and fly to any false assumptions or something that we always want to avoid, you know, of course, on the Robinette. Who really the hell knows?
Well, I'm not sure if I would put it that way exactly, but I think, yeah, your point is well taken.
Other than that, though, how do you feel the show's been running to this point? I've been listening here attentively up on the quarter deck, and the man is a definitely intriguing and engaging character.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's like a shaman-type individual, I suppose, and a spiritual seeker, and... very powerful personality for sure. So someone who's managed to produce and create a lot of great music and creative work over the years. So once again, you know, there's a lot of areas that we weren't able to get into. This whole business of the cassette culture, which I guess came partly out of the whole punk scene that seemed to sweep across not only the States in America, and as Shroom pointed out, it wasn't such a big thing in New Mexico because of the way that, it's almost like a police state, really. They have some pretty hard-ass policies and ways of targeting anyone that stands out as something just a little different from the mainstream of society.
I think we have something down there. Then is that Shroom Holly back on board?
Is he back? I don't know. Is that you, Shroom?
Yeah,
reconnect.
That's me. When you hear a sound like Gollum, it's me. Jeez. With my phlegm. My modem went down.
We weren't sure what was happening there. Yeah, all of a sudden you're talking about targeted individuals in Mexico and how the authorities tend to look upon these types, and you drop out of the picture. So we've got actually Captain Long John Sinclair standing by here. He's actually dropped in up on the quarter deck there. Maybe an introduction would be in order. Captain Long John
Sinclair?
Captain Sinclair, I guess it's, might as well, Shroom, Cuz the Shroom Holly.
A pleasure to have you, acquaintance, Shroom Holly. It's a really quite the life you seem to be living on top of a mountain in a New Mexico region. How are things today?
They're doing great. I live for adventure, man. I'm a freebooter.
Oh, it's fabulous. So, you know, one of the things, though, that we have not heard to this point is the pirate story. So to gain full, clear admittance onto the Robin Hood as part of the ship's articles, we do require some pirate story. And apparently you played a bit of poker back in the day with the Austin pirate radio people. Maybe you could...
That's right. Chaos Radio. Okay. Yeah, it was Chaos Radio because I had to ask some of my friends. But, yeah, they would have little poker games. And it was a... I'd go and play poker like we were, I was a Thunderhead too, which is what you call someone who works at Thundercloud Subs in Austin. That's a subculture. But I would play poker for tips, and because it was small change, I was really good at it. But when I was playing with these guys, the minimum ante was 25 cents. But, you know, it got to where we were betting $5 and stuff, so my bets, I just, you know, when the stakes go up, my brain gets soggy and I can't play poker. Plus, I don't have a poker face. But it was fun. I loved hanging out with them. I don't remember who any of them are, honestly, but, you know, it was a good time. And I think one of my problems is I didn't socialize really well in Austin. I don't socialize well anywhere, regardless. I'm not a schmoozer or anything like that. But we went and we tried to play poker, plundering the booty. I do have another pirate story, sort of, is I'm into role-playing games, Dungeons and Dragons, and I've always wanted to write my own. Right now I'm into LARPs, or I was, before my arthritis, and it's hard to fight with a boffer weapon when your knees are going out. My ongoing role-playing game is called Freebooter, which is another word for a pirate. It's not a game about pirates. It's about adventurers who plunder for treasure, but that's pretty much the same thing. There's just no ships, but freebooter. So that's one pirate connection. That's a pirate story for you.
Sure is.
I mean, I don't know if this is piratey enough for you. You know, here's the thing. I'm a cassette artist, and that the whole symbol of a cassette artist was a pirate flag with a cassette instead of a skull. I mean, that's on Pirate Bay, so as part of that culture, I'm just about as piratey as you can get, because that was our whole point. You know, we don't want to pay for all this music. We're gonna steal it and share it. And we did that on cassette back in those days. Doing it online, I have no problem with that, you know? I'm not materialistic. I'm not out to make money. I've never published my music with ASCAP or BMI. You know, all I do is I put a copyright notice on it because I want people to say, oh, that's cause. Cos wrote this. I don't have them say I wrote it, steal the song. But even that doesn't matter to me because I don't think music comes from your own intellect and your own consciousness. It's from the collective. It comes from somewhere else. You're just listening to it. You're a conduit for that power.
I concur with that point myself, being something of a songwriter, not as prolific as yourself, but indeed I can definitely identify. Let me just check with the captain here, who's up there on the ship's quarterdeck. Captain Sinclair, how do you feel? What are your thoughts on his pirate story references and anecdotes? Will they suffice for him to be able to join us on the Robin Hood in a formal sense?
Not a problem, Jack. That's well done. I mean, that's more than enough for sure. But Chaos Radio.
Should I have a peg leg or an eye patch or something?
Pardon me, is it Chaos Radio? What are you asking now, other boy?
I at very minimum have a headscarf, but should I have a peg leg or an eye patch or something?
Well, if you really want to play things up, I suppose that'd be one way to go. But going back to the authenticity, point that you raised earlier, I think that's very key, and you know, you really got to feel it in your bones to become a pirate and live the life. On that note, I've got to head off. Other matters here on the steward of the ship today out on the high digital seas. Very good having you.
Wind in your sails, matey.
Aye, I'll be back. Bon voyage. Okay.
And a bottle of rum. Oh boy.
There goes the captain. Yeah, he drops in from time to time, as our regular listeners are well aware. So I'm not sure about the rum so much. The grog, and we're always sure to have those corncob pipes filled to the brim with the elven pipe weed. And, you know,
yes, yes.
Miscellaneous good earthy
good stuff. Yes. So. Yeah. Oh, well, you know, I have my own brew that I call Chainer Juice. It's not all that much alcohol involved. I've actually haven't been drinking very much in the last few years.
Geez, that almost sounds like something worth marketing. We have to look into that, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, because the term chainer comes from this guy we called Chainer Dave. In fact, that's the guy we're moving into. He doesn't like me talking about him, but it's funny because he used to be a loose cannon, and that's what a chainer is. If you look on Urban Dictionary, I wrote the definition for chainer. Maybe I shouldn't say that, because if you link to any of the other definitions, you're going to get some really freaky stuff that's quite embarrassing at any point. I think chainer is a perfect term for someone who's a loose cannon, who's uncontrollable, just walks into your life and causes vast amounts of chaos. And you're like, oh, dear God, I didn't want to go on this adventure, because it's like, like a dog that's on a chain. It's like, put that thing on a chain because it's a dangerous animal. So that was the term. And it was weird because I came up with that term at the same time that my wife heard Chainer Dave saying, I'm a chainer in a dream. Actually, he was the king of the chainers. I had a dream where he was going, I'm a chainer. So me and a few of our friends just started calling people chainers.
Well, yeah, Chaos Unleashed. That's what initially came to my mind. So when did you cut out exactly? We got to wrap things up here in a few minutes. We've only
got 10 minutes
left here. But are you
going to... By my clock, we're overtime.
We don't mind running a few minutes overtime here for every once in a while.
Oh, that's sweet. Thank you. It means I was an interesting guest.
Well, when did you cut out exactly? Because as I was commenting on or talking about, you've got enough, I'm sure, fuel in the tanks there to you'd be good for a half a dozen shows, maybe even more, just getting you on board, letting things rip. But I think for maybe next time, a little different approach would be to kind of keep things, because you really – I guess you're something of a chainer yourself, if you don't mind me saying.
Yeah.
But a minute or two, and then maybe.
Especially when I have chainer juice. It's more organic. Right. It has some special supplements in it.
Sounds good to us. When did you lose your modem then? And what was, you cut out? What was the last thing you heard from our
end? You know, I was so panicked by it that I lost my train of thought. I can't think. I really don't know what I was talking about. I was talking about spiritual things, though. I don't know, maybe that was a little further back, but I was talking about how I wanted to get back to writing things that were spiritual in nature, because I think that politics is a dead end. Politics is what got us the power brokers and the system that we have now. And, you know, there's just so much, I mean, there's, you know, everyone has heard, everyone knows. If you want to find the scum of the earth, it's a politician. All politicians are liars. So why is it that we give these people power? And it's not us that give them power. It's the power behind the throne. You know, we'll call it what you will. You know, I'm not foreign to conspiracy theories. I used to not believe in them so much, but I've had so many experiences now in my life that verify so many things. Like, you know, for example, UFOs. I used to be rather skeptic, although I kept an open mind. One of the things that made me skeptic is because the details with the grays and where they were from and all this stuff were so particular that I just thought to myself, it sounds almost like a mythology. And is this really what's going on, or are people just building myths out of these things? And I don't like to be pigeonholed into anything, so I don't want to be called a conspiracy theorist or to say that I believe X, Y, or Z exactly is going on with anything, especially UFOs. But, you know, when I moved up here, everyone, you know, has seemed to have had encounters with them. And, you know, some of them were trying to show me them. And I was like, well, that could be this or that or the other. In fact, one time it definitely was the planet Jupiter, because my friend only has one eye that works. And he was looking through the trees and they were moving. And I was like, no, that's Jupiter. I see it every night. I know where it is. I have a telescope. I like to, you know, amateur astronomer. But, you know, he's right. He was right about so many things that I was wrong about. As far as the 9/11 truth thing goes, I used to be very much against it, but, you know, I was a bit brainwashed at that point, but he always believed in it. And I think it's quite possible, but I have to say that the only thing that I know for certain is that they knew it was going to happen and that they took advantage of it to begin this monstrous dystopian geopolitical power grab chess game where pretty much human beings all across the planet, including our own citizens, are disposable to these people. And I actually think they want to, you know, you've heard of the Georgia Flagstones, I think, these people calling us mindless eaters and wanting very few of us left. So I'm starting to buy into a lot of the conspiracy theories, so-called conspiracy theories, because that term itself was invented by the CIA to discredit people who are saying, somebody assassinated Kennedy for political reasons. It wasn't just some crazy guy with a gun. So yeah, you know, he's one of the ones that were showing me UFOs, and I'm pretty sure that some of them were now. You know, I knew that I had to see something really spectacular. I had to see something that just told me in unequivocal terms that this is not something, a device created by human beings. So we were on our way up to Nebraska to see the solar eclipse 2 weeks before my birthday. It would be my one birthday treat. And, you know, we don't have the stability to actually plan this kind of trip. We just did it. We just said, roll the dice. Let's go. We took a chance. And life's an adventure for me. And I take risks like that. And I was even advised against it by many people who It was an incredibly hard trip. We had to borrow a car, very small, not in good shape. And my son, I actually had a fear that something was going to happen to him, which did happen to him, which is sort of. I was terrified going through Albuquerque because we were looking at my Explorer, which my friend wanted to borrow, and it wasn't in good shape to make the road trip. And it had child safety locks on the doors, which I didn't know about. And I was like, oh, that's a really great thing. Well, I started thinking about that. I'm like, oh, my God, he's not in his car seat. What if he opens the door and falls right out before I have, you know, the presence of mind to know what's going on back there? And some point during the trip, he actually opened his door, but he was in his car seat. So, but it was still terrifying. And the way they drove on I-25 in Colorado was insane. It was like a death race. Our speedometer was broken, so we were going 10 miles below the speed limit. But even on the way back, when we were going the speed limit, because I got a GPS speedometer, even on the way back when we were going the speed limit, I was like, these guys are insane. They're driving like they want to murder everyone. I mean, it is horrifying. I went up there to Nebraska to see the eclipse. We were hosted by an old friend who I hadn't seen in a long time. He's quite a character and not someone I agree with very much. And he was being very obstinate about his opinions and being something that I could have taken myself, but with my wife and family there, and just wanting to see him personally and not have these discussions, I was a little put off by it. But anyways, I lost a lot of sleep on that trip. I seldom stay up more than 24 hours, even though I have insomnia, but I was up about 48 hours on the way up there and was only catching cat naps once we had gotten there. But I was in one of these cat naps when my wife woke me up and said, "Cause, there's a UFO out here. There's really one out here." So I got out of my tent, and I looked up, and I saw about 20 seconds of it before it vanished, faded. It went translucent. It wasn't like a vehicle that turned off its lights. It went translucent, faded, and there were three red dots in the middle. It's a bright orange light, almost like a fireball, shaped kind of like a Chinese lantern, but it was moving purposefully like an aircraft. Well, you know, that 20 seconds of it was amazing, and I was sitting there in the lawn chair at night, sitting there watching the sky the night before the eclipse, thinking to myself, oh, man, I wish I could see it again. I wish I could have seen it for longer. And about 30 minutes later, it showed up again and stayed for, and I saw it the whole time. It was about a minute, maybe a minute and a half, and it was just gliding in the sky silently like an aircraft, but it seemed to be made of light, and the light was a different kind of light. It wasn't just light in the manner of being photons and something physical, but there was some other characteristic other than physical that this light had that I could see, like it was illuminating a part of my brain that doesn't normally see light. So something funny was going on while I was observing it. And I was just ecstatic that I finally now knew for myself that, yeah, there are things, inexplicable things in the sky that are not made by human beings, that are not from this earth. I don't know if there's people in them or whatever, but what I saw was what I saw. And then we joked about it coming up there, as, hey, maybe we'll see a UFO. But the interesting thing about that encounter is, after the eclipse, when we were headed home, we had a functioning speedometer because we used a cell phone app. And by the way, that data exists. So if we actually did get taken, there should be data on that somewhere in some database where they're monitoring you for either NSA or commercial purposes to know what you're doing. So there must be data somewhere that'll say, oh yeah, you stopped on the side of the road for 6 hours. What's up with that? You were 0 miles an hour at that point. But we don't remember this. We don't remember anything except the trip was taking so damn long. It took as long for us to get back to New Mexico as it did for us to leave. And that wasn't right because we were going the speed limit this time and we were not stopping as much. We stopped for 6 hours in Pueblo, Colorado. And we actually could have gotten weed in Pueblo, but we didn't. We're just getting other things, making sure the car was in better shape. Didn't have a visor. I was blinded by the sun at one point. It was an awful trip. One of the worst road trips of my life. And that's saying something because I've been in a van for 2 weeks with Suck Dog and Dame Darcy and God bless the whole bunch of them. It was a wonderful, but not the most easy time to have. The trip should have taken us 12 hours to do. This was a tough road trip. It took 24 hours. There's some reasonable delay in that, so I figured at least 6 hours were not accounted for. There were 6 hours of that trip that just shouldn't have been on that trip. And from we can't New explain
Mexico
it.
To Nebraska.
From Nebraska. On the way back. On the way up, it took 24 hours because we stop all the time and stop for long periods of time. At least an hour or two at every stop. And like I said, 6 hours in Pueblo, Colorado. But on the way back, the longest stop we made, the longest one was an hour and a half, if that. And the other ones were less than an hour. So it's inexplicable to me because it should not have taken that long. We were going the speed limit. Nothing added up. The time didn't add up. Well, and I was like, my God, why did it take us this
long? Yeah. Let me ask you a few questions here before we, steer the ship into the harbor here and transition on to the Rogues Gallery premium content end of things. What did this object look like and how close did it appear to be?
Like I said, it was like a Chinese or a Japanese lantern, the ones that float.
Oh, except there you
it was
go.
Moving it was like a Chinese an aircraft. Lantern. But it was moving like an aircraft and it was very bright. It was very bright. It was like a sulfur light, a sulfur street light. It was orange and it tended towards a pinkish salmon for me. Phyllis saw other colors in it. So that's a good indication that there was a spiritual or psychological aspect to the light coming off of this thing. And by the way, when we saw the eclipse, that was another time where I saw a different kind of light, the corona of the sun, which I'd never seen before because this is my first total eclipse. So the whole trip was about seeing different kinds of light. But the UFO was a different kind of light. It looked like a low-flying aircraft, perhaps a mile or so away, if that, because I think it got closer. When it got closer, it looked almost like it was over the park, 100 yards out after a block. And I'm surprised that no one else reported this thing because it was so bright and so low and so different.
Well,
and it was silent, completely silent.
You were out on your friend's homestead at that point. Were you not with your wife in a tent?
No, I was with my wife in a tent, but it's not because we were in the woods or anything. We were actually in a small town called Crawford, Nebraska, which he lived in a very small camper. So that was on a lot. And it was mostly a big suburban neighborhood. And there was a park. And we were using we'd have to go to the park to use the bathroom in the public restroom there. And I got the feeling that the townspeople were kind of hostile or curious about, because it's like a very white area.
Yeah, some new people in town here.
Brown skin. New people in town. Some people now even don't just, I used to be an anonymous brown person, but so many people have been overseas that I actually appear Middle Eastern, so it's kind of frightening sometimes. Yeah. But yeah, so they were eyeballing us. We were in a tent in his yard because he didn't have enough room in his camper for us, obviously. But no, it wasn't in the woods or anything, so I was surprised. It's a populated area. Other people should have seen this thing.
You caught about 30 seconds of this.
The first time, about 20 seconds.
Right.
The second time was a bit longer, like at least a minute, I think.
You said to yourself, after it disappeared, it'd be really great if we could see that again. How long did it take for it to...
30 minutes. About 30 minutes. I was out there talking for 30 minutes. One of the few occasions there where we weren't getting into some discussion that I didn't want to have, and I actually felt comfortable, and there it was, showed up again.
So your host was there with you? There was the three of you that witnessed this?
Yeah.
The three
of us witnessed it. Yeah, we all saw it.
Well, how about that? And you pretty much all agreed, the description and the distance and those sort of particulars, I guess.
I went over it. Nobody challenged my observations, except, Phyllis said that she saw yellow in it, too, and I didn't see yellow. But I understand that, like I said, it looked like a sodium lamp, and sodium lamps have a yellowish cast. That was the kind of light that appeared to be coming from it at first, right, first glance. But then when you looked into it, it had a characteristic, like it was light that was construct of some kind, non-physical yet physical. It's hard to explain, but the same kind of eerie, odd, different radiation type of light was what I saw when I saw the sun's corona, except the sun's corona was white, just pure white.
Sure.
It's one of the most brightest, magnificent whites I've ever seen.
And just the time loss, you could not explain. You have no idea how to account
for
that
no
whatsoever.
Way. The only way I can account for it is if someone was to somehow get into the database of the people who keep track of that information. We didn't save the road trip. I hadn't thought to do that. You could save the data and look and see if there was a six-hour period where we were going 0 miles an hour or otherwise seemed to have not been there, you know, because it's GPS and it's recording this stuff. Well, on the other hand, sometimes these instruments are interfered with by these beings, but there's no doubt in my mind that there's at least a six-hour block that is inexplicable and shouldn't happen. So we do think we may have been taken. In addition, when I got back, and it could be just the rigors of the trip, but I had a few psychotic episodes, and they were uncharacteristic of any other ones that I'd had. They were full of very dark thoughts.
Which is what exactly?
Just having serial killer type thoughts, actually. And it was like, oh my God, have I been taken and my brain been tampered with so that I become somebody's killing machine? I mean, I don't have that in me. I know how to fight. I mean, that's what happens when you live in rural New Mexico, because there's going to be fights, either real or simulated, as let's spar in some way and train for combat, because that's what happens. But I'm not, I have a very a hypersensitive conscious when it comes to killing or hurting other people. When I was a kid and I got into fights, I always pulled my punches and I would never hit somebody's face because I didn't want to hurt them. I couldn't bear the thought of hurting someone else. I have a lot of compassion and I have a conscience, so I don't think I could be a serial killer. But here I was getting into these mindsets where my mind was shifting and I just had these horrible, violent thoughts about just wanting to just go out and kill for the most selfish of reasons, just for the joy of it, you know. Just to have that thought in my head that was so alien to me was very disturbing, especially when Phyllis was saying that from what I've been reading and researching, these are probably the Greys. And the Greys, from everything we understand about them, are very not good. They're not the good ones.
Yeah, mixed reports dark purpose. A lot of negative feedback on that front.
A lot of negative,
Did she have anything to say herself regarding this whole matter as far as her mindset was concerned?
She wanted to research it. She wanted to research it as much as possible to find out exactly who these beings were. And I felt the same way, although I have a more vague notion of these things because, like I say, I don't want to buy into the details or the particular mythology that's being built up around these things, you know, and that's instinctive of me as an anthropologist, is I want to observe these phenomena objectively, write down and observe the various characteristics. It's just scientific training. But getting back to that, see, she had seen crafts before. Hers that she had seen before were blue. We've also been getting into Native prophecy, because there's the Hopi prophecy of the Kachina, the blue star and the red star, and they would be appearing. And the idea is that we'd all be going to a different world, but the ones that went to the red star would go to an evil world, and the ones that follow the blue star would go to the good world. And the weird thing about that and about that prophecy is that there is actually now a forecast within the next 4 years to be a supernova that is visible from Earth, very bright. It's probably going to be the brightest thing in the sky when it happens, and it's going to be red.
Well, we might actually be doing a show here dealing with the whole Charlie Red Star incident, which took place in southern Manitoba in the mid-1970s. Grant Cameron, don't know if you're familiar with his name or not, but he's going to be revisiting us here, hopefully, maybe sometime in the new year. So that'll be interesting, too, if we bring up the whole Hopi angle. He might have a few things to say about that. But let me just end on this note, and we'll wrap things up here now. We've been running things here for a while, obviously. So, Pirate Joe Aminon says, Hope. Well, he says, hope not to remember. What I'm thinking is maybe I would consider a hypnotherapy sessions with, of course, your wife on hand.
That's what she said.
Yeah, you don't want to do that kind of stuff alone, obviously, because you never know what kind of rabbit hole these hypnotherapist characters are going to take you down. So, but just as we wrap things up and you know, drop anchor back in the bay, any websites or future upcoming events or just last comments or points you'd like to make?
Well, you can listen to my music and buy it on Bandcamp, and just Bandcamp and the username Cause the Shroom. Just search for me there. I also have some streaming on SoundCloud, and Barbarian Clan, of course, was intended to be my central webpage, just in the traditional fashion. Typically, if you want to know about what I'm doing, my Facebook page is the best place to see it. I'd like that to be my minds.com page, because I want Facebook and Google and all of that to go down, And in fact, Jaffe, you have suggested indirectly, and I'm going to do it, is go back to using Firefox because Google's full of it. They're manipulative and a ghetto like every other place, a mental ghetto to corral people into group thought.
Yeah, I myself don't know what to do really as far as that whole business is concerned. It's great that there are a variety of options, including Linux, which maybe that would be the route to go. Although my, frankly,
I'm on Linux. Abilities, I use Linux.
On that, yeah, note, yeah, we're going to head on back to, I'm not sure where you want to patronize or drop into tonight, either the Howling Wolf Inn, the Scurvy Dog, or the Mossy Wench. Those are the three main watering holes that we have here.
Goodness, they all sound like a gas.
Well, thanks.
Good night, folks. I hope I haven't been a total idiot online.
I've had a great time. This has been one of the more fascinating shows, as I thought it would be, very intriguing, captivating. It's just unfortunate I wasn't able to kind of jump in there a little more, and I always hate to come across as, you know, being too rude or interrupting guests. You yourself are very quite the raconteur and capable speaker. So we're going to maybe hear more from you, of course, in a similar way on the back end of things here. Just get you to stand by then. Thank you once again, Cuz the Shroom. We will speak to you shortly as we cue up our show outro. Aye now, there we be. Having carefully looked over each of our navigation panel instruments, checking every level, switch, knob, and dial, by all accounts and indications, we indeed see it's time once again to drop anchor inside the bay and draw an end to another week of Pirate Radio Podcasts. Don't forget, if you're looking for a little more free-flowing action, we've likely got another great Rogues Gallery After Show coming up next in either Google Hangouts or Skype. Also, if you've in any way enjoyed or found yourself benefiting from the shows we've tirelessly produced over the past year and a half plus, you might want to drop by our new Patreon tip jar page and lend a little support. Presently commanding a whole 6 big ones per episode, our unimpeachable longshoreman math skills tell us we're on course this year to set aside around $150 in charity. Help to keep those numbers growing over on Patreon, and we'll be able to extend even more of a generous pirate hand. Be sure to join us again same time next week. Amazingly, we're now booked solid until December, with a whole wide range of colorful guests and show topics, along with what's bound to be a few big surprises. So be sure to drop by WPRPN.com's feature interview area and check out what we've got on tap for the last few months of 2017. If you yourself have an intriguing idea for a guest or story, you can either drop us a line directly over on WPRPN.com or fire us a quick email via PirateOneRadio@gmail.com. WPRPN.com network subdomain links are also now available. Great for artists, musicians, podcasters, social media personalities, or pretty much just any landlubber looking to boost their online visibility, presence, and reach, basic accounts can be launched for only $15 a year. Staking your claim now helps not only strengthen you and the network, we're also looking out for the little guy. That's right, folks. Half of all WPRPN's profits are redirected right back into the hands of the people who really need it most. Community charity. After all, we are the Robin Hood. You can further embark on your own personal pirate journey by liking, subscribing, commenting on, sharing, and following any of our main social media channels via Facebook, iTunes, Twitter, YouTube, Google+, or Minds.com. So don't forget to become engaged. Until we meet again out on the high digital seas, I'm your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Tally-ho!